I'd like to reconvene the board meeting. Since we were absent a few board members, I assume they're going to trickle back in. Got one, two, three that are still out. So, just for the remainder of the board, I tried to make it clear when we took the recess that we would reconvene at 10 of 12. So, I'm 10 of 1, sorry. We are reconvening. I am informed by my staff that we need to go back and correct an error that was present in the prior language that we adopted for RMAPs. My apology, there was some incorrect language in there, and I think I'll let Darren explain it.
Good afternoon, members of the board, Mr. Chairman, Darren Kramer, Force Practices Division Manager. Mr. Chairman is correct. We had inadvertently inserted two chapter references in the motion, and at this stage of the game, it would not be wise of us to have those chapter references because we have not done a thorough scrub of all the chapters to ensure that there are not other references to the date besides those two that are shown. So we revised the motion to remove that reference and simply read amend rules pertaining to the RMAP completion date.
So who was the first motion to adopt? Was that you, Tom?
Yeah.
And who was the second place for that? Carolyn? Would this meet with your approval?
Certainly.
Yep. So what do we need to do? Do we need to re-adopt this proper language?
I would recommend
that we adopt this proper language.
The council for
to unadopt the
or there could be a motion to amend the prior.
Okay. I move we amend the prior motion to read as follows. Is that correct? Process? Okay. I move that the Forest Practices Board direct staff to file CR101 with the Office of Code Revisor to inform the public that the board is considering rulemaking to amend rules pertaining to RMAP completion date.
Second.
All right.
And I'll note that this is identical to the previous motion, except taking out the limitation of the two WACs that were noted in the previous one. It just broadens it, makes it a little bit more flexible if we find other references that need to be adjusted.
All right. Thank you for that. I assume there's no discussion, so all in favor of the motion, raise your hand, please. All right. So you have your correction. Again, thank you for catching that sooner than later.
Yes.
A special meeting.
Wouldn't that be special?
Moving on then to our next item on this afternoon's agenda, we have the opportunity for public comment on watershed analysis rulemaking.
Now.
And we have two members of the audience who have signed up to comment. The first one is Adrian Miller.
I really mean it this time.
Yep, this time for sure.
He's got the writing.
I apologize. I kind of get those two issues intertwined frequently. Good afternoon, Chairman Goldmark, Forest Practice Board members. Still Adrian Miller, and I'm still commenting on behalf of the Washington Forest Protection Association. WFPA supports the board action being proposed to file a CR101 that considers rulemaking that will implement the board's previous direction to provide a more clear and thorough process for implementing the mass wasting module of the Watershed Analysis Program. Based on the cooperative discussions being facilitated by the department with the many interested stakeholders, in particular the Conservation Caucus, the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission, and the Department of Ecology, WFPA is optimistic that consensus will be reached on the specific rule language that is being discussed. I would also like to draw to the board's attention to the fact that this cooperation is not just taking place in the context of the rulemaking discussion, but also, and perhaps more importantly, on how the department intends to implement the existing and potential new rules. Specifically, the prioritization process for initiating the review of the mass wasting prescriptions, as well as the process for what I think we're going to be terming reanalysis. The staff of the department should be commended for their leadership in working with all of the stakeholders to develop what we anticipate to be a mutually agreeable solution to this complex issue. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Adrian. Carl Forsgaard.
Hi, Carl.
Good
Good afternoon, board members. I'm Carl Forsberg with the Washington Forest Law Center. And the Conservation Caucus likewise supports policy's recommendation that the board provide public notice with a CR 101 for possible rulemaking on watershed analysis. There is a strong consensus among all the stakeholders that rule changes are necessary, particularly to make sure that watershed analyses are up to date by clarifying when reviews are necessary and clarifying who will provide sufficient resources to do those reviews and providing DNR with the authority that DNR needs to manage this program. We need to remind ourselves that the watershed analysis program will only work if DNR maintains sufficient staff resources to implement it. But in the meantime, the policy subgroup on watershed analysis has had teams working on the specific rule language changes that will be presented later. And DNR will be making that call. We look forward to seeing what they recommend. And we're optimistic about it as well. But the teams have also been working not only on rule language, but also on the nuts and bolts of implementation. And I, in particular, want to thank the folks in policy who have staffed these groups, because there have been folks who personally worked on the initial watershed analysis drafting process and the drafting of prescriptions many years ago. And so they're bringing a great deal of personal knowledge to this process, and we're benefiting from that. But I also want to particularly thank the representatives from WFPA, Adrian Miller and Pete Heide, for the high level of cooperation and collaboration that we're now seeing between the timber industry and the conservation community, because that's very good news indeed. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Carl. So moving on then to the staff report, Darren.
Good afternoon again. So the two-part topic here. The first part is focused on the administrative actions that Forest Practices staff is taking in follow-up to the March special meeting that we have here. If you remember the flowchart, for some of you that weren't here, you won't remember. But it was basically a visual of how Forest Practices can get the review process going under existing rule. And we have been working on that since that time. And we're making good progress. In the memo I provided to you, I hoped to have that process done, excuse me, this month. And when I say done, I mean a prioritized list of all approved watershed analyses, as well as a standardized review process for the mass wasting module. Well, we're not quite there, but we're getting darn close. We do have a preliminary prioritized list, and we are seeking input from primary sponsors of those approved watershed analyses to determine their interest in pursuing reviews and their capacity to do so under what type of schedule, or if they're simply interested in getting out of the watershed analysis business, so to speak, and going to standard rules. So that's related to the prioritization, and we have a letter that's being prepared to go out probably today or tomorrow to those sponsors to get that feedback. We've also been working on the standardized review process. We have a preliminary draft complete of that as well, and look to probably one or two more meetings with some stakeholders to take a look at what we've done to push that towards a final product and get some feedback on that. So we're probably looking at mid-September, but we're darn close to having those two products complete and being ready to initiate reviews. So that's all I was going to say on the administrative process about reviews. I did want to touch on the agreement that was struck between the department and the Weyerhaeuser company back in May. We talked a little bit about that at the previous meeting. And we used the supplemental directive tool, which is a rarely used tool available within the rule. It's basically a voluntary agreement that is entered into between the department and a landowner operator to conduct activities in a certain way. And so that's what we did for the two watershed analyses down in Southwest that is still in an upper Chehalis. We drafted a supplemental directive with Weyerhaeuser and advised them to implement the standard rule basically identified, rule identified unstable landforms and the standard rule process that goes along with those, along with their watershed analysis prescriptions. And they've agreed to do that, and everything I've heard since the end of May is that things are going well down there, good communication between the region and Weyerhaeuser, and we've had no issues with that agreement so far. So that's my update on the administrative side. If there are no questions, I wanted to move to the adaptive management piece and ask Miguel to come up and make a few comments. But I'll take questions before we do.
Yeah, just one hopefully minor question. You indicated in that the prioritization process is ongoing with the primary sponsors of the watershed analyses in the various areas where that occurs. One of the issues that had been identified during the discussions over the last few months was those landowners that were not the primary sponsors but were also included in an overall watershed analysis. That may have a different idea of how they would like to proceed compared to the primary sponsor in a watershed analysis. Have you given any further thought or policy direction to that?
Yeah, somewhat of a complicated issue.
I realize it is.
There are several watershed analyses where the Forest Practices Program was the primary sponsor, and there were several reasons for that, one of them being that there were multiple landowners in a watershed and or it was a high priority watershed to conduct analyses on. So in those cases, we are still going to offer the opportunity for landowners within that watershed analysis administrative unit to conduct a review if they so choose. But it's complicated because we can't take it on ourselves and do it. And when there's multiple landowners, it's going to be difficult to get all of those members on the same page and wanting to do the same thing. But we want to make sure that that opportunity is out there for the landowners to do so should they choose. In a practical sense, those are probably not going to move to the top of the list right now just because of the complicated nature of the multiple landowners. And we will probably have to deal with those in another way in the future. So we are focusing on those where there are few landowners or single landowners, and those that have risen to the top of the list through the prioritization system. So we don't have a quick and easy fix for those cases where there are multiple landowners at this time, but we're still going to make the information that we have available to them and certainly the process available to them should they be interested.
And one of the things that I think we had talked about during the committee discussion, and I believe in front of the board as well as a whole, was potentially the ability for one or more of those landowners in the multiple landowner watershed analysis unit to opt out and adopt or take the standard rule as an alternative to whatever their prescriptions might be. And I realize that that's a complicated issue, and it does take perhaps some change in the procedures that are set up. So I would just ask that you keep that as part of what you're working on.
Yeah, we're going to be looking at that as we go forward and see how, and basically let the situation develop to a certain degree in those cases to see what the best actions for us to take going forward will be. We certainly don't want to get into the situation where we've got multiple prescriptions within a watershed if we can avoid that, because administratively that's difficult for us to manage. But under the current situation, that is something that could be an outcome. But we would not want to be in that situation over the long term. That would be our preference. But yeah, we'll keep a close eye on it going forward and manage it as best we can under the current authorities.
Are there questions on the administrative side of this before we move on to the adaptive management board?
Okay, so we have, I think I reported to you at the last meeting that policy accepted the proposal, formed a subgroup, and began a report right away. Miguel and Pete volunteered to co-chair that subgroup, and so I think they want to say a few words before I ask for the CR101.
Thank you, Chair, members of the board. I guess a note that DNR staff and actually part of Fish and Wildlife Staff too, and Ecology. We've been working really hard on forests and fish, and we wanted to keep the momentum moving. And so in this case, not usually the case, but in this case, Pete and I took over the responsibility of co-chairing, which normally the state would have done had they had the capacity. So we're trying to keep the wheel rolling even under these dire and continuing to be projected dire budget situations. I guess the number of watershed analyses that will actually be in play is something that we're looking forward to finding out. In terms of landowners, we're actually interested in maintaining those prescriptions. I'm hoping that it won't be so many that it is a financial aspect to it that's going to be tough for DNR to do, as well as, I guess, the landowners themselves. But the availability will be there. I mean, I think that was your issue, Norm, and I think we're trying to get to that. I think that one of the interesting things in terms of going over this process is the bigger picture of unstable slopes. You know, the current forest and fish law talks about looking at landforms where you need to do something different, rule-identified landforms, and then providing some kind of protection, buffers, et cetera. So there's two pieces to that. One is, what's the prescription where you apply to it? And then the other is, are those prescriptions being applied, and are they being enforced? And then, of course, the next question is, are they effective? So those are open questions. And yet, also part of this issue on unstable slopes is just the fact that even though you may do that, you still do have unstable slopes. And we have people building in floodplains and areas at the basin of areas where there's going to be prone to instability. Even a question there, of course, is management aggravating that? Are we increasing the level of background instability by having management there? I think those are some of the bigger questions, the fact that we allow development to occur in those areas, and we know that we have areas in Washington, the young geological formation, that they're unstable. Finally, I just wanted to say that the rule change piece of this, we've been working with DNR and talking about some issues that you've raised, and I think we've advised DNR on what we think some of the rule changes should be, and Darren hasn't said so already. I believe the language that they're drafting will be ready fairly soon for review. And I guess I just want to make a pitch. It just amazes me. I mean, with all these issues we're dealing with, they still have to do small business analysis, economic analysis, environmental assessments. So all these things take a lot longer than any of us would like, but that seems just to be the nature of the job and working under these limited resources.
Thank you again. My name's Peter Hardy with the WFPA. I basically just want to second the comments that Adrian and Carl and Miguel have made. And I particularly want to thank the board and the board members that worked on the committee on this issue, because really that was the hard work, was getting the issue together and putting it in a format that then we could fairly easily go to work. There's still a lot of work in terms of translating that agreement and the board's action into rule, but that was really the hard work. And Tom Laurie and Sherry Fox, Norm Schaub and Dave Herrera, I think did a great job on that committee. And I thank the board for following that direction. And again, we're supporting the work that the DNR is doing here to get these rules correct. And like I say, it's a little more complicated than we thought it might be in the beginning, but I think it's going to turn out fine.
All right. Thank you for that report from the panel that's working on it. And again, we really appreciate the collaborative nature of the effort and the time that you put in to bring this to the board.
I guess one thing I would add to Miguel's comments is he is correct. We're making good progress on where we think we need to make substantive amendments to the watershed analysis rules. And I would expect that we'll have something ready for the next board meeting for 30-day review. I was just informed that we have a member of the public that arrived, which she thought was going to be on time. But since the agenda's running ahead of schedule, she was not here for the public comment period. And she would like to make public comment on this topic. Would the board like to entertain that opportunity for the member of the public that showed up later? Or she showed up early, actually. Turned out to be late on the agenda. Okay, we'll step out for a minute.
Thank you. Good afternoon. So if you didn't know it before, you know now that we often move faster than you think. Welcome.
Well, that's
please tell us who you are.
Sure. My name is Holly O'Neill, and I live, do you want my address? I live in the South Fork Nooksack River Valley in the Acme Watershed, and I've come up down here today on behalf of my own interests and the interests of my neighbors for the Watershed Analysis Review. I want to start by saying that I really appreciate the work of the DNR staff in moving this process forward. It's really important work, especially in the light of the devastating, can you hear me okay? Am I talking loudly now? You know, the landslides we had this last, in the 2009 winter, were really devastating and really the level of damage and with people running from their houses, you know, their dramatic experience of it was very intense. And so we're really hopeful that some of, you know, we understand that we live in an area that is naturally unstable. Our family house was built in 1896 and it stands still. We also recognize that there's legacy issues that the DNR has been working to correct, and we're really thankful for that. And there's a real question whether or not the rules right now are doing everything that's possible to protect public safety, and we really are looking forward to making, and I just love hearing what I heard already of just that that's a priority. We had a failure happen on a landform that was not, the rule identified landforms. It happened on a planar slope. The whole hill came down. You know, the people's home was gone. Thank goodness they weren't in their house. But, you know, it wasn't identified in the Acme Watershed Analysis. And the prescriptions that are there now, we are really, it's time for them to review. It's been 10 years. It's really time. So we're really hopeful looking forward. And I've never spoken before, board, so thank you for this opportunity. We really value public safety and appreciate that you do, too. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Okay, given that, we do have a recommendation for you, and that's to advance the CR101.
So we get the discussion going, if somebody wants to make the move.
Sure, I will make the move. I move that the Forest Practices Board direct staff to file the CR101 with the Office of the Code Advisor to inform the public that the board is considering rulemaking to amend rules pertaining to watershed analysis reviews.
Thank you for that. Is there a second? Okay, Dave seconded. And please know, board members, the staff has gone to some effort this time to avoid any kind of unnecessary detail. Okay, questions, discussion?
Tom. Thank you. First of all, I'd like to thank the co-chairs and Miguel and Pete for their work on this. It's really appreciated. It's great to see this going forward. And thanks to DNR for their focused attention on this. Appreciate that. This rule is an asterisk rule under which ecology shares responsibility. And so I just wanted to go on record as saying ecology supports this action, since I didn't make the motion, just to make it abundantly clear that we support this step in the process.
Thank you, Tom. That's important. Thanks for the reminder. Other questions, comments? We all know the need is there, and we have a good group that's working to develop the language, and this is just the first step in the process. Right. With that, I think we're ready for a vote. All those in favor of the motion, raise your hand. Again, thank you. It's unanimous for the record. And thank you, board, for that.
Thank you.
And thank you, staff, for the presentation. Okay, moving on then to the next item is an opportunity for public comment. Northern Spotted Owl update. That's our next item. So we have two people that have signed up. One is Carol Whitaker again. Welcome back, Carol.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I attended the meetings of the Northern Spotted Owl Policy Working Group last year and participated as a group member representing the Conservation Caucus at the final meeting. The team that was formed to implement the working group's consensus recommendations has made some progress, as you will hear shortly. But the Conservation Caucus is concerned that they may not have sufficient resources to fulfill their duties in a timely manner. Owl habitat continues to be harvested at a faster rate than is being created, and the recommended incentives program is badly needed to begin to reverse the decline of the owl on non-federal lands. I urge you to direct DNR to make spotted owls a higher priority and secure the resources necessary to support a full-time position that will allow the implementation team to fulfill its mandate. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Peter?
Good afternoon. Peter Goldman of the Washington Forest Law Center. This meeting is turning into such a love fest. I don't want to reverse trends completely. I was wondering if the commissioner would entertain a motion to extend the amount of time that all the speakers have to speak now that everybody is just so complimentary and whatnot. I guess that motion would likely be denied very quickly, but it's just a little bit of time for glass half empty with respect to Northern Spotted Owls, quite frankly. A little history for some of the board members who were not around. The Conservation Caucus had to take the state and a landowner to federal court to stop logging around an occupied spotted owl circle that was logged down to about a quarter of what the federal guidelines said is enough to sustain the owl. And out of that came a negotiating settlement process. And we find ourselves about almost 3 years down the road in that process, and some of the fundamental things just simply haven't yet been addressed. In a substantial part of the state, it's still perfectly legal to log around what is believed to be a spotted owl nest site down to no habitat at all. In other parts of the state, just last week we had a few SDS, FPAs, logging actual habitat in a spotted owl circle down to the 40%, where we're literally negotiating over points 41%, 42%, 38%, that kind of thing. Nothing's changed. Nothing. We're exactly where we were 3 years ago. So that part is not being solved well. There's a lot of talk about incentives. There's a lot of talk about maybe DNR devoting more time to this, which we know is going to be difficult. But there is hope for optimism. The science proves to us that we can now identify where spotted owls are. The use of dogs, trained dogs, to locate owls is absolutely feasible, economical, and extremely reliable. And we also have enough knowledge now to start developing some areas where we need to recultivate these populations of spotted owls and protect their habitat through either regulatory or non-regulatory mechanisms. We need to move on and do these things. They will not be forgotten, I'm afraid. There's a lot of talk about good things, but it's not enough to just keep talking about it 3 years later. We're exactly where we were 3 years later without anything, and we have fixes. So please, let's keep moving on this. It's time for cooperation. It's time to follow the science, and let's use these dogs. The survey methods right now are basically useless. The vocal calling for owls to see if they're there doesn't work anymore. It's almost best available sign now. These dogs are amazing. They can find owls. They can distinguish between barred owls and spotted owls. Once you collect their fecal matter, they can be taken back to the lab and can be tested for every single thing that we want to know about them. The technology is there to really know where the owls are and what we need to do. So we could really put that stuff to work, and we need to, because this is just not going to get any, it's not going to go away. Thank you.
Thank you. So that completes our public comment on the Northern Spotted Owl update, and so Chuck Turley is here with us to get a staff report.
Chuck Chairman Bill Mark, members of the board, good afternoon. Again, my name is Chuck Turley. I'm the Deputy Supervisor for Regulatory Programs at DNR. I want to talk with you about the work of the Spotted Owl implementation team. But first, I've got to reflect on something based on what Peter was just talking about. In 1991, I was a member of a WDFW survey team that was doing some of the initial work for Marble Mirelets in the state of Washington. We were up working out of our lot on the still Guamish, I guess. And that year, 19 years ago, we had a woman on the team who had a small dog that she kept with her all summer that actually helped us find the first marble muirlet nest that was found here in the state, almost by just by happenstance. But at that time, we joked about, wouldn't it be great if we could train dogs to find some of these birds? And now, 19 years later, and it looks like that's, we should have paid more attention to that at the time. So I want to talk with you, as I said, about the implementation team. It would be very difficult for me to get up here and try to contradict testimony that you just heard suggesting DNR may need more resources to move this along as fast as people would like. Your board meeting today, I believe you've talked about, separate and apart from anything to do with Spotted Owls, five separate rulemakings, four of which are going to require all of those things that you heard talked about of economic analysis and those things. And when Peter just said he knows it's going to be very difficult for DNR to apply more resources to this, he's absolutely right. The same can be said of WDFW, who is also a member of this team. So that's just a kind of a part of the reality you're going to have to keep in mind going forward. Our implementation team, as you remember, was put together as a result of your February 10th meeting, in which you accepted the consensus reports from our policy working group that met last year. You directed me to form an implementation team of five members, which we did. Those five members are Sean Cantrell from Seattle Audubon, representing the Conservation Caucus, Kevin Gabu from Weyerhaeuser Corporation, representing the timber industry, David Whipple, representing WDFW, Bettina Von Hagen, who is the CEO for Forest Operations on EcoTrust, and myself, and I chair the board consistent with your direction. Excuse me. You directed us to go away and try to put together a plan for implementing those consensus recommendations and to form a technical team that had a very specific task. So what I've brought back to you today are basically three items that I'm hoping to get your support for. The group has developed a charter and a set of ground rules, which you were provided. They're the second and third pages behind that tab. Those are built off of pre-existing documents. The charter, the way that was developed was to take the charter for the implementation, or I'm sorry, for the policy working group that met last year and simply amend it to make it consistent with this newer group. The set of ground rules that are there are the TFW ground rules minus one. There was one of those original ground rules that really didn't apply to this group, so we removed that. But that's what we're using, what we're recommending to you as a charter and a set of ground rules for our group going forward. The other thing, the last page behind that tab, the direction you gave us was to form a technical team, convene a technical team to assess spatial and temporal allocation of conservation efforts on non-federal lands using best available science. And what we've done is spend a considerable amount of time trying to develop the specific questions that that group would be asked and a list of people that we are in the process of soliciting to participate in that group. The questions are laid out here, and again, basically what they deal with are if we're going to put effort into spotted owl conservation on non-federal lands in Washington, where should we do that? and how should we do that? That's the two basic questions. Our approach is to convene a technical team. The basic commitment we're asking them for initially is a one-day commitment to bring them together, probably here in Olympia, probably in September, and have them look at those two issues. If the information's available that they can answer that question in that one-day meeting, then that would be the result. If it's not, we want them to define for us the process that they believe would be required for them to answer that. I didn't include here the list of the individuals. I didn't want to put anyone in a bad spot if they, in the end, had to say no. But what I did was include the entities that we're approaching for these technical members. They're basically federal and state biologists, tribal biologists, or we have some industry consultant biologists. We're looking at a group of six individuals with expertise in spotted owl biology and two that have expertise in the economic side, so that once we know where we want to apply conservation, they can help us look at what the best tools are, whether that's easements or fee purchase or exactly how to try to do that. At this point, we're waiting to see the draft revised federal recovery plan. The original estimation was that that would be available by the end of August, and we were then going to convene our team in September. I think they're running a little behind, so we're waiting to see that because we want this technical team to have that in hand. And one of the commitments we do have for participation in this group is that the leader of that federal recovery plan revision, Paul Henson, with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Portland, will be a part of this group. Robin Thorson from Fish and Wildlife has committed his time. We've also got commitment from WDFW that Joe Buchanan will be involved. So we want them to have that revision in hand to see what it may say about the importance of non-federal lands in Washington. So my request of you today would be that you would adopt the draft charter and ground rules that we put forward, and that you would approve us moving forward in this manner with our technical team. Be glad to answer any questions, or there is a draft motion on the board.
Questions, Tom?
Question, yes. To the public testimony we just heard, you sort of addressed it generally about resources. I just wanted to hear it specifically. The idea of a full-time position and the idea of wildlife detection dogs. Do we have resources that we can put to these, either of these two things?
I think the question about the survey techniques dealing with the dogs would probably best be answered by WDFW rather than by DNR. I'm not sure whether Ms. Jackson or I think Mr. Whipple's here. I don't know whether you guys have been involved in that at all. Regarding that, I think the suggestion for a dedicated staff position was specific to the topic of the incentives discussion. When he was division manager in forest practices, Lenny Young actually prepared and we submitted 3 years ago as a part of a budget decision package, a request that would have funded exactly that position. And we were unable to get anywhere with that request. That would be a very valuable position for us to have. We simply don't have the capacity right now to do it.
I had a question. Your comments included, or your recommendation included, the convening of this group in September with the charge that you described. And the question I had was, what's your sense of whether the data that they would need to fulfill that charge upon convening is available, because opt-out is, if it's not, they need to prescribe a manner in which the information they need can be obtained. That becomes another cost item as well, and I want to make sure that's recognized as, kind of part of this package.
the revision of the federal recovery plan that's going on right now is, my understanding is from what I've been told, focused on some specific areas of public comment that were received to the last iteration of the plan. Many of those comments were specific to the lack of information about the role of non-federal lands in Oregon and Washington. If those comments are truly addressed in that revision, then I think it's possible that much of that synthesis and that data collection and analysis will have been done. But until we see that draft, it's hard to be able to tell that. That's why we'd like this group to have that in hand when they meet.
Oh, did you have a question? Okay. I was just going to ask, in conjunction with Mr. Goldmark's comments, if it's possible for perhaps DNR and DFW to work with the University of Washington. If I understand that the original dog study was carried out in Northern California, and I don't believe a similar study's been done here in Washington, and so one way to maybe advance the application of that technique up here is to work with research institutions, and maybe they have access to grant funding sources in a research context to be able to at least pilot that technique up here. So it wouldn't necessarily be a draw on financial resources of either DNR or DFW, if there could be some cooperative work with the university.
Good suggestion. I'd be glad to look into that before I respond. Since you asked that question, one thing I did want to mention too, you'll see in the report that I gave you, I mentioned that we do have two people supporting our group, one of whom is board member Sabine. And I just wanted to let you all know that at our last meeting, she did make a statement to the group that she does want to continue participating with our implementation team in the support role. And she was very specific that she will be doing that in that support role, not as a board member. And with that, the group was very comfortable with her doing that. She's got a lot of expertise that we can use.
Sure. Well, just to respond to Paula's request as well, that's a great suggestion. I'm willing to look into that as well. And we actually talked a little bit earlier, and I just want to reiterate some of what Chuck said. Yeah, we're under a lot of funding constraints as well, but we want to try to provide some sort of leadership guidance for this group, and recognizing that we're on a six-month time frame here and wanting to have something come out of this. So I'm going to do whatever I can to try to make that happen too. And I appreciate your leadership so far, Chuck.
So a motion would be appropriate at this time?
I will move that the Forest Practices Board approve the Spotted Owl Implementation Working Group's charter and accept the draft process for the technical team. I further move that the board support the implementation of the technical team.
Second.
Carol made the second. Thank you for that. Is there a discussion on the motion?
Just one question, clarification. I think I heard earlier on that this recommendation that you brought forward is a consensus recommendation of the implementation team.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Ready for a vote? All those in favor, raise your hand, please. Okay, that's unanimous. Thank you, board. And thank you, Chuck, for the presentation and for the hard work. Just a reminder to the board, last time I had a chance to talk with biologists about this species is still in significant decline. So our continued attention to the issue, I think, is very important. And with that, our next item on today's agenda is a Clean Water Act Assurances Report from Ecology, Stephen Bernath and Mark Hicks, please. You guys are becoming familiar in this report.
That's the idea.
So, good afternoon, board members. I'm Stephen Bernath from Ecology, and I just want to make a couple of high-level comments as illustrated in Mark's memo to you. As everybody has been discussing today, we've been dealing with five different rulemakings and all the work that goes into those. A lot of the work is just beginning on four of those. So one of the concerns we have is we have not completed any new milestones, and so we are late on several milestones, and some of the ones we thought would get finished in the last 3 months didn't. The good news is we did start work on two new milestones, but we are very concerned about our ability to sustain the level between the work at the board and the work of trying to meet the milestones under the Clean Water Act assurances. So we would urge the board, when you have your work plan meeting in November, to really be careful about what you think about getting done in the next year. And because what we're finding is the more work we're doing for you, which is not, I'm not saying any of this work that we're doing is not supported by ecology or important to ecology. However, it does take away from our ability to complete the milestones that have been laid out.
Tom Mark Hicks with Ecology, Forestry Water Quality Coordinator, and I hope these quarterly reports are helpful to you. If this is not the way that you'd like to hear about it, please let me know and I'll adjust the information to suit what your needs are. But we did think that coming to you every quarter and giving you kind of a heads up on where we are with meeting these assurances is worth doing. So I need the feedback from you if for some reason you wanted a different format. Well, Steve said most of what I was going to say, so you know, a little bit of an extra wheel right at the moment as I look through my list of things I wanted to talk about. But I think it was about 6 months ago, during one meeting, I said that if we didn't move kind of quickly, we'd end up in a situation where we were getting backed up, and there would be too many of these to actually be able to do. And I'm afraid that's where we're at right now. By not meeting some of those earlier milestones, we now have a breadth of issues to deal with, which is much bigger. And in spite of all the real good effort by people, we just don't have the oomph to push them through. They're sitting there all around 80% complete, all the ones we thought would be done. But when there is really an eye of a needle effect here, where there are a few people that are the real, they're the ones that do most of the weightlifting in these programs and getting things done, they have to touch everything. And they have to be involved in all the new initiatives plus all the milestones. And what we're seeing right now is the effect of that. That in spite of the fact that we're starting new milestones, new initiatives, but we can't get any of the other ones all the way done yet. I'm still optimistic that this next quarter is going to be the magic one and that we can actually get all those that are sitting there so close to being done over the hurdle. But I'm afraid we're in a real touchy spot right now. I'm particularly concerned, of course, with the long-term funding issues and CEMER. That's going to probably still be the biggest pinch point. Any questions?
There's just maybe a clarification, Mark. Maybe it would be helpful to have an example from the chart that you provided, that we all have, of one that is one or two that are 80% done in your mind that are just not getting over that finish line.
There's actually part of the process for involving stakeholders in the annual RMAP reviews is almost done.
Where is that on this list?
I can find it.
The first one under 2010.
Make me put on my glasses.
Part of the good news here, and one of the things I did want to, I forgot to mention when I was up here on the RMAP panel, was hopefully we will complete two or three milestones as a result of the RMAP process. So, I mean, that's one of the good news items. Specifically working on figuring out where we are with small landowner roads, recommitting to a long-term funding strategy for adaptive management, figuring out how to make sure there is good accountability and involvement and so forth on RMAPs. Those are all things that will get hopefully get completed as a result of the RMAP effort.
Other questions? Paula?
Will you, prior to our work planning session in November, perhaps prepare some material to help us understand the impacts of our decisions on being able to reach these milestones? Just in terms of being able to prioritize. So if what I hear you saying is that we've got such a big workload that we're putting on staff that it's difficult for several of these items to get finished, and in light of maybe us not wanting to make that worse, if you could help us understand some of the impacts of different decision points on being able to get this work done, that might be helpful.
Yeah, we'll give that a try, as much as we can.
We'll have to be in concert with DNR staff, because some of the, DNR, we still appreciate a whole lot that DNR has taken these milestones to heart and has taken a lead on many of them.
Will any milestones be dropped because you're working on that report?
Well, it's a little bit of a forecast kind of thing, so that's why I said we'll give it our best try. You know, because we have to somewhat do a little bit of a forecast and how things are going to proceed and, to be able to do that. But I think we can put together some sort of a memo that will give you a better idea.
Other questions? Well, thank you both for this commentary. And I think it's important that you do this on a regular basis. And I think some kind of a graphic representation of where we're making progress and where we're not making progress, at least on a semi-annual basis, is very useful. I know it is to me, and I can't help but think it is to the rest of the board as well.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you. So that concludes our published agenda. I would like to call an executive session for a brief period of time, let's say 15 minutes, to discuss some pending litigation. So if the audience would please excuse themselves so that we can go into executive session. We will come out of executive session before adjournment.